This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to...
I like that. Try
something new.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's just spice things up a bit, yeah. Andy. I like it.
It's a keeper. It's a change-up.
I like
That's
it.
That's what the Americans call it.
It's a change-up pitch, that. I like it. I was bamboozled by it.
Welcome to issue 104 of the Bugle audio newspaper for our visual world with me, Andy Zaltzman, here in London's prestigious London area, and live in the city of a thousand pricks, New York. I know that sounds bad, but with 8 million residents, that's just one prick per 8,000 people. That makes it the least prickish city in America.
It's not that bad.
Joining me, it's one of the 7,999,000. It's John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers.
Nice.
You're right, it is fun.
Yeah.
It is fun. God, it's like going back to Bugle 1 again. I've got the same excitement. Andy, it has been snowing its frozen arse off here. I'm not going to lie to you. And I have to say, rather than send the salt I received from Jeff for you in Hawaii, I have used that salt here myself, scattering it everywhere like a drunk farmer. So let me hereby state for the record, I owe you and the people of Britain one tube of salt, Andy. That's official.
Did it work?
It did, yeah. Yep. Cleared my steps. Right. Thank you, Jeff. So, last Saturday, Andy, I went to do a gig at Michigan Tech, which is in Hancock, Michigan, on the upper peninsula of Michigan, geographically described as in the middle of nowhere, further north than, I believe, 90% of the Canadian population. It took three flights to get there. The final one was a tiny prop plane, and the airport we landed at only had two flights going in and out of it every day. We were so small that it was the first time in my life I've disembarked an aircraft and thought, there is a genuine chance that I'm about to get attacked by a bear. It's just not often that you feel that way at airports anymore, especially after 9/11. And it was actually quite refreshing. The thought that a bear could wander over logistically, snatch your luggage from you and say, I'll have that, and there better be some honey in here, or I'm coming back angry. But I like it, Andy. I think you'd like it up there. It's like Fargo. It's like that Coen Brothers film Fargo. Everything's blanketed in snow, and people have the air about them of human beings who know they are completely unsupervised. It's the wild west of a tundra up there. I would not have been remotely surprised to see someone feeding a human leg into a wood chipper.
Sounds like Lincolnshire, but colder.
You'd love it. They had this thing called ice bowling up there. Well, basically, it's even better than it sounds. Obviously, there's ice involved. But instead of a ball, a human being is put on some kind of sliding device and is then thrown at these massive wood skittles. That's the kind of thing you do when you're unsupervised.
Did you play that, John?
I didn't, but I got told about it. I remember thinking, I want to do that one day.
That sounds like an excuse that some guys have made up after they were caught by the police basically beating someone up on a frozen lake. Oh, it's old traditional game round these parts, officer. Ice bowling. Well, I haven't had quite such an exciting week as that, although I did throw a triple 20 and then a bullseye with successive darts.
Is that true?
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah, I meant to as well.
I guess it must be hard for the Buglers, Andy, to listen to a moment of genuine sincerity between the two of us, but I'm really impressed by that. How did it feel?
Well, John, you know, alone in my study.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a shame that I couldn't share it with the world. Now I have. So this is Bugle 104. There are now as many bugles as guns on HMS Victory, John. Admiral Nelson's flagship confidently named HMS Victory. Luckily, that confidence proved well-placed. Uh-huh. Ship naming in the late 18th, early 19th century. Really the equivalent of boxers trash-talking. These days in press conferences before a big fight. If you think of the fleet that Nelson had at the Battle of Trafalgar, it included HMSs Leviathan, Conqueror, Revenge, Minotaur and Thunderer. Ships whose names shout out, I'm going to knock you out. Nelson said, knock you out.
Don't call it a combat.
Up against the Franco-Spanish fleet, including such ships as the Camembert, the Gitane, the Fufu, the Tapas Variadas, the Macarena, the Butragueño, the Platini, the Guardiola and the Zidane. So no wonder we won. Naval warfare is 99% psychological. If you think you're sinking, you're sinking. Also, 104, the number of officially numbered symphonies by 18th century megastar composer Joseph Haydn. And Symphony 104 is known as the London Symphony. And by incredible coincidence, John, that is exactly where I am, London. And I'm Haydn in the studio, trying to keep composed.
Oh, no.
And it's definitely me. It's not symphony. I'll be staying here throughout. Those are my movements. I guess the key D major thing is not to let any birds of prey disrupt the podcast, like a buzzard. Orchestral.
Ow.
Do you get orchestral?
Yeah, I got it.
I'll be instrumental in that. Bassoon, we'll start properly. I'm not going to string you along. Oh, Bo, I can't believe I said that. Still, if you can do better, see if you can trumpet. Hornishly. Well, that flute by, didn't it? Let's not talk about it again. Don't coda. As always, Section of the Bugle's going straight in the bin this week. Film reviews. Of course, it's Tom's last Bugle as a resident of
the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah. The greatest hemisphere in the world.
Well, we'll see about that when we get there.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, why not do some Joseph Haydn-based puns?
What?
Yeah,
it seems appropriate, doesn't it?
It's the equivalent of playing the last post.
Yeah. So in the bin, film reviews, and the reviews of the latest batch of historical epics to hit the big screens, including Et Three Brute, a heart-rending true-life tale of a professional Julius Caesar impersonator in 1st century BC Rome, who has to go into hiding after the real Caesar is assassinated, only to be pursued by a group of three zealous Brutus impersonators. Also out, the Albert Hall Ball, a cracking wartime caper explaining how Hitler's other testicle came to reside in London's Albert Hall. And also out, Shrinkin' Lincoln, a classic what-if comedy. What if on the fateful night that 6-foot-5-inch president and assassination victim of the year for 1865, Abraham Lincoln, went to the theatre to be gunned down by John Wilkes Booth, he had swallowed a magic potion that made him shrink to the size of a household gerbil. Hilarious pratfalls ensue as Booth tries to find the miniature Republicans as he scuttles between the seats at Ford's Theatre, Washington, D.C., before scurrying to safety through a drainpipe and overseeing the rebirth of his nation from a special cage and exercise wheel in the White House.
Andy, if you convince Vin Diesel to play Abraham Lincoln, you have a go picture.
Would you do it? Would you do it, John? I mean, it could be just a thing to get your movie career back on track.
Oh, I tell you what. I mean, it's a big gamble, but you know what? That might coax me out of retirement.
Top story this week, and well, the 11th of February 2010, it was a very special 20th anniversary this year, commemorating an event that shook the world, an event people couldn't really believe was actually happening, a shock whose aftermath reverberates to this day. Mike Tyson was knocked out by Buster Douglas. And on the undercard that day, Nelson Mandela was let out of jail. He must have thought, what power I have in these fists, I knock Mike Tyson out. Next thing we know, Nelson Mandela's walking down the street. So what were you doing on the 11th of February 1990?
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Nelson Mandela's release became one of those where were you moments. So everyone remembers what they were doing when he took those first steps of freedom. Personally, I remember watching it on my parents' black and white TV in our kitchen. And I was at that age where not only did I realise that this was a major moment of history for the world, but I also knew this was probably going to delay lunch. I was old enough to understand the gravitas of the moment, not quite old enough to handle that gravitas in an appropriate manner. How long is this sandwich going to be delayed, do you think? Are we talking 30 minutes or up? Because if so, I'm going to try and eat a biscuit on the sly.
Well, I'll tell you what I was doing. I was being born. Oh, no, sorry, I'm mixing myself up with Princess Aya Bint Al-Faisal of Jordan. No, what I was actually doing, John, of course, it was a special day for me as well. It's my 9th birthday, and I was very excited. I was wondering why everyone was making such a fuss about an old man on the telly when it was my special day. And I vowed that I would compensate by forming a all-girls supergroup and winning 5 Grammy Awards. Oh, no, hang on, I'm mixing myself up with Kelly Rowland. No, what I was doing, John, I was a 15-year-old boy, John, with a South African father, some of whose family had strong links to the ANC and knew Nelson Mandela personally, and I was abuzz with anticipation, John, at that time. It was, not really at Mandela's release, but the fact that the West Indies v England Test Series was about to begin about a week later. And it was really the first time in my young life that England were going to be taking on the Caribbean giants with an outside chance of not being whipped like a naughty egg white. So I was excited. Yeah, I was very excited. I was excited. You know, obviously it was exciting to see Mandela released as well. I remember as I watched the immense events unfolding momentously on the telly, although I of course had a colour television because I'm from a much better family than you. One of the iconic moments of the 20th century, potent symbol of human progress, a beacon of hope to the disenfranchised people of the world. I remember asking my father, does this mean that England can play South Africa at cricket again? Big friend of the family, of course, Big Nelson. Welcome round Shay Zaltzman any time he wants. Doesn't even have to book a table, like most visitors to our house.
Wow, that is very nice, Andy. That's a big offer.
Yep.
It was great news for South Africa 20 years ago. Even better news for all of humanity. Slightly less good news, I would argue, for cricket, Andy. The best news of all being for Big Nell himself, who managed to deliver a speech of superhuman restraint after being released after 27 years, in that it somehow, incredibly, didn't start with the words, "What the f*** was that about?" Seriously, what the f*** was the last 27 years about? I'm going to need some answers, because I'm pissed off now. Pissed off. Holy shit, that was a long time. I mean, that was a really long time. As part of the celebrations this week, they reenacted in South Africa Mandela's Walk to Freedom. And when I first read that headline, Andy, I had a horrible split-second thought that they might have jailed him again just so they could re-release him. Because that would have been a very nervy moment for Nelson. Yeah, sure, I'm going to get in the cell, but let's just be clear, this is a reenaction, right? It's definitely a reenaction. It's just, the last time you got me in here, you left me here for nearly three decades. Well, I don't think I am thumping on about it. I don't think I'm actually doing that. Mandela, who's now 91 or 64, if you don't count the years that were stolen from him, attended a special session of Parliament where he heard President Zuma deliver a tribute. And President Zuma said, in the two decades since the release of Madiba, which is Mandela's clan name, our country has changed fundamentally. President Mandela united this country behind the goal of a non-sexist, non-racial, democratic and prosperous South Africa. And those are very noble thoughts, Andy, beautifully expressed, but they do ring a little hollow coming from a man who's been charged with rape, racketeering and corruption, who's been married five times and who's just had his 20th child. 20 children, Andy. He's also said that gay marriage was a disgrace to God and that when growing up a homosexual would not have stood in front of me, I'd have knocked him out. What I'm saying is President Zuma actually achieves the impossible. He manages to make you appreciate Nelson Mandela even more.
Well, to be fair, he did do the whole speech without marrying or impregnating anyone. So I mean,
that's true.
You know, he's learning, clearly. It does prove what an incredible man Mandela is, the dignity and grace he's shown as a symbol of hope for our stroppy species. And I think looking back, we can now all agree that apartheid was definitely a bad thing.
Yeah, I think we're at that point.
Rude. We're very, very rude.
It was impolite.
It was a time of amazing change for the world 20 years ago. In the space of a year, we had the end of the Soviet Union, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the end of apartheid, Nelson Mandela freed, and Canada rediscovered after lying dormant and undetected for 35 years. It was all happening.
This week also marked the 31st anniversary of the Iranian Revolution. Although had the events following the election of June the 12th last year gone a slightly different way, they might have been marking the 7-month anniversary of a different Iranian revolution instead. In response to the anniversary, the government in Iran rallied hundreds of thousands of their supporters onto the streets to dissuade opposition groups from doing anything stupid, like saying anything out loud or gathering in groups larger than one. Apparently, security forces in Iran were armed with tear gas, live rounds, which they were firing into the air, and apparently paintballs to mark the protesters. That system, Andy, is solely designed to make riot control more fun for the security forces involved. First, they let them ride around on motorbikes hitting people with sticks, and now they give them paintball guns. I don't know, Andy. Paintball guns on a motorbike, that is a tempting job to apply for. Let me make this clear, I do not agree with what they're doing over there, but even I have my limits. All I'm saying is, if I'm not here next week, you will know where to find me.
I guess it is, once again, blurring that increasingly fine line between systematic oppression of political opposition and stag weekend.
In Tehran, a huge crowd hit the streets to listen to bugle favourite Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. It was the latest stop on his crazy tour, and he used this opportunity to, you've guessed it, attack America and the West. And who can blame him, Andy? You don't go in front of a crowd that big and not play your greatest hits. It's like the Rolling Stones not playing Brown Sugar. It is not the time to try out your new stuff. Know what they came there for. In fact, he could have just started railing against the West and then held his microphone out towards the crowd and let them finish it off themselves. Join in if you know the words. Wave your lighters in the air. Now wave the American flag into those lighters. Now wave those flags in the air again. Tehran, you've been great. I'm out of here.
You're talking like a man who now has bigger crowds at his gigs than he did when he lived in England. He celebrated by cranking up his nuclear grandstanding. You know, why not? It was his country's birthday. Why not treat himself? And the world responded by giving Iran as a present in return the threat of sanctions. So it's been a happy day for everyone. Other news now, and Tom is leaving the country on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a petulant walkout from Tom and his family.
Bloody emigrant.
He's putting his bat under his elbow and he's walking. He's not waiting for a decision.
I'm resigning.
Well, you're not, though. Actually, you're resigning for 1 week.
For 1 week. It's a protest that I think will carry a lot of message.
You're resigning from Britain.
I'm resigning from Britain.
Not from the Bugle.
It's time to go. It's just too wet and cold here. Yeah.
The long and the short of it is that Tom is emigrating to Australia, where he will continue to do the Bugle from 2 weeks, meaning the amount of space the Bugle is about to cover is just spectacular. We're going to be doing this in three different continents.
We are truly intercontinental, that's right.
In fact, we're going to be doing it on different days. Tom is going to be doing it on Saturday in Australia.
Morning, that's right.
Yeah.
And you'll be doing it on Friday morning in New York, in America.
Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no... It's a great sign of how far technology has come, that you can do something this stupid.
Or emigrate to Australia.
No, that's true.
Let me assure you, technology has had no help at all in us emigrating. Buglers, it's a very stressful process, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. I think you can... I tell you what, you sound like me in Hawaii, Tom. There's that bass to your voice of, oh, God, give me strength.
Well, John, you've emigrated before. What do you miss most about Britain?
That's a good question, Andy. Do you know what? Mince pies.
Right.
Yeah, they don't have mince pies here at Christmas, which seems to me ridiculous.
So some mince pies.
Yeah.
Not me, then.
With a mince pie in your hand, Andy.
But what about the times we used to play computer football together instead of working when we had a deadline coming up? Does that mean nothing?
No, I do miss that, Andy.
Right.
I do miss that. I do miss you deliberately trying to get players sent off. God, you loved that, didn't you? You loved the two-footed challenge.
What is it about people I work with moving to another continent?
That's heartbreaking.
Is it me?
You just must be driving people away.
The trouble is, Andy, you need to start using some deodorant, to be honest.
Yeah. I think both Tom and I just cannot bear to be in the same time zone as you anymore.
Yeah, we didn't just go, you could have done that by going to France, John.
Let's not go mad for six months of the year.
So Tom is leaving this country at its lowest ebb. Maybe not its lowest. I guess being dicked on by the Normans wasn't great. Or when the Vikings were giving us the old wham-bam, thank you, ma'am, only without the thank you bit.
Yeah.
Or when the Black Death was wiping out half the population in the 14th century, that can't have been much fun.
We got kicked in the balls by the Romans as well, Andy. Yep. Don't forget that.
And the old civil war that ripped this country apart ended up with King Charles being forced to do his version of the old one-head, no-heads trick. Or when it looked like Germany might sneak the Second World War, that was probably a lower ebb. No, we have had lower ebbs. But the point is, he's off.
He's off.
He's taken his Australian wife and his English daughter with him.
Don't say that.
And he's off. Zoom!
I will be back very soon on the end of a phone, tired, out of my mind.
Yes!
Speaking to you. I'll probably be on the same level as you guys.
I just hope your little girl keeps her English accent.
If you think we can annoy you from here, Tom, just wait till you get to Australia. It's going to seem even more frustrating.
Well, you've robbed me of my Friday night, destroyed my social life, and many friends have moved on without me.
Yes.
So I'm just can't wait to see what you're going to do to me in Australia.
Well, there's so much more to this mission, Tom. So much more. Going to completely break you.
Yeah, love guru too.
That's what'll do it.
Bugle feature section now, and it's Valentine's Day on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Valentine's Day on Sunday, the 14th of February. Yep. And it's been mocked by a very controversial story here, John, that has yet again torn Britain apart at its very seams, in which a primary school in Somerset has banned pupils from sending Valentine's cards to each other to save them the, quote, emotional trauma of being rejected.
Oh, dear. So, I think it's a very bad move, Andy, because it is important that children at the earliest possible age have their hearts trampled to the ground and their souls crushed.
Yeah.
Well, it's character building, Andy. Sets them up for the real world they're about to enter.
They need to learn how to deal with rejection, because rejection, John, to me, is the beef mince in the bolognese of life. Without it, it lacks depth and texture. And I think as a nation, we are bad at dealing with rejection. Ever since the Empire said, that's it, it's over, Britain, I've had enough. And Britain replied, I can change, just give me another chance. I promise I won't exploit you again, you f***ing ungrateful bitch.
I think the best Valentine's Day card I ever had, Andy, I think I was like around 9 years old. And there was a girl who gave me a card which wasn't so much affectionate as it just, it had a 10-point breakdown. Why do you not like me? And there was then 10-point argument, which is pretty advanced for a 9-year-old, to which my only response could be, I just don't see the point of you yet. I didn't even know yet at that point. I just thought, I just don't get the point.
Where is she now?
I don't know. I can't, actually can't even remember her name, Andy. Isn't that sad?
Right. Well, if you're listening,
I did email us. Yeah, I tell you who I would like to know, Andy. The first girl I ever loved was, I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
Sarah Constable.
All right.
And I loved her because she had blue glasses, I remember, and very shiny black sandal shoes.
Okay.
And I thought both of those things were very cool.
You shallow bastard.
I was ahead of my time in terms of how vapid I was. Now, personally, Andy, I'm not a big fan of Valentine's Day, but even I wouldn't take it as far as Saudi Arabia, who on Thursday launched a nationwide crackdown on stores selling items that are either red or heart-shaped or in any other way allude to Valentine's Day, which is banned there. They've officially banned it. Red-coloured or heart-shaped items are legal, apparently, at other times of years, but as February 14th nears, they become completely contraband in Saudi Arabia. Boy, they, you know, they never cease to surprise with just how intolerant they are. Listen, I don't particularly like the day either, but easy.
I think this thing about rejection, learning to accept rejection is very important, John. And because, you know, I've learned to deal with rejection. I got rejected a number of times. I got rejected when I applied for a job to be a sub-editor for Potato Processing International magazine.
Uh-huh.
Back in 1997.
Yeah.
I wasn't even good enough for that. But it made me think how differently my life could have turned out if I'd got that job.
You'd have been great at it, Andy. You'd have been the best potato processing writer of all time. Yeah. I firmly believe that.
I just think by now, you know, I might have been able to move sideways and work on its sister publication, Potato Storage International, that was launched in 2004.
Clearly, please, these guys, please tell me that isn't true.
It's true. These guys are going places, John. And maybe then I'd have been looking at one of the publishing house's other marquee titles, such as Asia-Pacific Baker or European Baker. Who knows? But by
now,
John,
you've cried wolf too many times, Andy. I don't believe these exist.
It's all true. By now, I could be the Randolph Hearst of business-to-business trade magazine specialising in the starchy foods industry. But instead, I had to settle for showbiz. Amongst my other rejections, John, an offer to do a free encore at the Comedy Store in Manchester, December 2002. That was rejected pretty volubly.
Yeah, and unanimously.
Yeah. A polite request to join the England cricket team, rejected. Fully costed plan to get my school to launch a nuclear weapons programme, rejected. Apparently the last chemistry teacher tried it, ended up blowing half of Kent. And a demand for state immunity from prosecution in return for information about who killed the Queen Mother, rejected. So I'm just, all I'm saying, kids, is learn to live with it. And now it's St. Valentine's Day Fact Box. Anonymity is a key plank of what Valentine's Day is all about. St. Valentine, after whom the day is named, took this anonymity so far that nobody knows who the f*** he was, or where the f*** he was from, or even exactly when the f*** he lived. All that's known about him is that he's almost certainly dead by now, probably the victim of a martyrdom-related crime. And that when he was alive, he loved writing rhyming couplets inside folded over bits of card and eating pink food. Also, the traditional anonymity of Valentine's Day is why the perpetrators of the Valentine's Day massacre were able to keep their identities a secret. If the massacre had happened on any other day of the year, legally, they'd have had to fess up. Also, there are many famous romances sparked into life on Valentine's Day. Sultry screen sex siren sorceress Marilyn Monroe wooed ace playwright Arthur Miller with a Valentine's Day card containing a four-act play about the Salem witchcraft trials. Prefaced with the poem, "If it was 1692, I'd put my witchy spell on you." Miller later claimed the work as his own and called it the Crucible. Queen Victoria and Prince Albert got together when he organised a 21-cannon salute to her in Morse code, spelling out the words, "Hey, Queenie, you've set my Teutonic heart a-buzzin'. Don't be put off just because I'm your first cousin." And Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, they hooked up on Valentine's Day 2002 when they were both stood up by blind dates at Jongleur's Comedy Club in Birmingham. Coincidentally, they'd both split up from their previous partners exactly 1 year before. Pitt left his then-girlfriend, the former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, after she received a card that he thought might have been from Yasser Arafat, whilst Jolie dumped her beau, the 1979 world snooker champion Terry Griffiths, after he insisted on practising his break-off shots rather than going out for a romantic dinner. And famously and disastrously, mythological Greek king Oedipus and his mummy got together on Valentine's Day, after she sent him a jokey Valentine's Day card as a nice maternal gesture in case he didn't get any from the girls in his school. He took it just a little bit too seriously. And some Bugle Valentine's Day tips, including how best to broach the subject, whilst guaranteeing the level of anonymity that guarantees your intended love will remain completely unaware. Well, the best way is to infiltrate your local radio station as a newsreader and deliver a bulletin in which the first letter of each word, when written out, spells out John Keats's hit platinum-selling love poem, "Bright Star, Would I Were Steadfast As Thou Art." Alternatively, get your best friend, on whom you know your Valentine has a long-standing crush, to write the card for you, obviously in their own handwriting, and sign it with their own name. That way, your would-be love will have no idea that it is actually from you. And also, never deliver a Valentine's message at gunpoint. Your emails now, and this one comes from Chris Edwards in Bedford, England. That's
yes! Yeah. Wow!
He has a PS in which says, "John, I noticed that your Wikipedia says you grew up and were educated in Luton."
That is not true.
Yeah, well, he says, "As a Bedfordian and former Mark Rutherford school member, this should cause you great offence."
That was the school I went to.
Yeah, well, that's what he's saying. He obviously knows that. Chris Edwards has done his research.
Is he saying, did Chris Edwards go to Mark Rutherford?
He doesn't make that clear.
Oh, I thought he was saying he'd been there. Yeah, I never lived in Luton. I lived in Bedford. Wikipedia strikes again.
I mean, that's pretty much like saying I'm not a crocodile, I'm an alligator. It's the same, isn't it?
I'm not disagreeing with that. But,
anyway,
you know, it's important to alligators.
This email from Chris, he says, the subject, "Andy has broken me, I've contracted punitis." "Dear Andy, John and Tom, in order of closeness to England and therefore closeness to God, brackets Tom, technically with Andy being a Jew, a good one or not, you should be second, but you are Scottish, and so, well, you understand."
What?
"My email is regarding a matter of mental health. Every week I download the Bugle and listen to it a good few times." You're bringing this upon yourself, as this is a mental health issue. "Mainly while working around the house, and when I go to sleep. Don't take this the wrong way, but the Bugle helps me sleep." Yeah, I don't know. I've had that at gigs. Have you ever had anyone fall asleep at a gig, John?
Of course I have. Yeah, more than once.
In fact, I did a gig at university in Leeds, and there was a girl who was asleep, who then woke up and delivered the following heckle. Said, "Oh, are you still going? Oh, I'll go back to sleep."
Ouch! Ouch!
Anyway, he continues, "The other Sunday morning I woke up and wanted to have a full English breakfast. Good, patriotic breakfast. So I needed to pop round to the local shop to pick up some bits. When I shout up the stairs to my sleeping wife, this torrent of bullshit. Someone has beans at my bacon. I'm going to have to rush her off to the shop. I hope I'm there before the church kicks out all those old ladies. I might need to break fast. Then my plans would be toast. Don't grill me about the cost. I know the prices at the shop are rather extreme. I guess I just black pudding it off. My wife then came out of the bedroom, looked down at me with a look of disgust as I beamed back at her with pride, and then she announced that she would be banning Bugle at bedtime."
That's probably wise for a number of reasons.
"She fears for my mental health. I can only assume that a constant barrage of bullshit puns has broken my brain, and this is some kind of conspiracy by Andy to control the world, knowing that if everyone is spending time with wordplay, they won't see him nick that nuke before the end of the year. He signs off, an ever faithful bugler now listening under the covers with a torch. Chris Edwards.
The best way to listen.
Do you need the torch?
Good point. I didn't even think of that, Andy. I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
It's a great email from Andrew P. Street regarding the England football captaincy. He says, "Dear gentlemen of the Bugle, having heard of the tragic penis-related events that have embroiled the English football captaincy in such a sexy, sexy controversy..."
That's a wonderful way of putting it. No, none of the papers say this is all about penises.
Yeah, it's right. I think it's excellent. Excellent for Andrew. Good journalism. "I would like to nominate myself as captain of the England team. I believe my unique mix of skills, experience and apathy towards sport would make me the ideal candidate for this important position. My reasons are summarised thusly. One, as an Australian living in Australia, soon to be countryman of Tom, I would be geographically insulated from the public scrutiny and trial by media surrounding the position, thereby lessening the risk of being distracted from my duties." Good point. "Two, my lack of knowledge of and interest in the sport gives me a George W. Bush-esque outsider cachet." Didn't quite get that reference, but still. "Unlike those training in the football, I would not be hidebound by predictable traditional approaches to the game, paving the way for fresh new ideas. For example, there's nothing in the rule book saying a dolphin can't play football." I think there might be. Actually, he says an asterisk and says, "Well, maybe there is. That being said, John, if you want to use your fancy Hollywood contacts to turn this into a premise for another piece of cinematic gold, let's talk points." Good point, Andrew. Let's have that conversation. "Three, I've won exactly as many World Cups as Britain in the last 3 decades or so, meaning that statistically, I'm due." That's true. "Four, I own a pair of shorts." Wow.
It's getting better.
It's hard
and better
to argue with him. He said, "I look forward to discussing this with you at interview. Yours sincerely, Andrew P. Street."
We have had quite a few. This one comes in from Chase J. Stowell, whose name basically suggests that he might well have been England football captain in about 1880. He says, "Dear John Crushed Soul Oliver and Andy Fact-tastic Zoltzman and some Scottish guy, I believe I'd make the best England football captain for 3 reasons. One, I have not had sex with Vanessa Peronkel,
the former
girlfriend of Wayne Bridge. Assuming these qualifications get me the job, here are the strategies I would use to win England the World Cup. One, win. Two, stop using English players. Three, consider moving England to Brazil. I would like to thank the Bugle for its sponsorship. England football captain, Chase J. Stowell."
Okay, nice try. Still think I'm going to give it to Andrew P. on that.
Yeah, I think you... Yeah.
We have another sports email here from Annie Allen. The subject line reads, "The Saints' victory. Who dat, mother?" "Dear Mr. Bugle, last week on the Bugle, John said while predicting he would win the Super Bowl that his heart said the Saints while his head said the Colts. The win by the Saints on Sunday just goes to show that thinking with your head is for suckers, losers and Colts fans. Who dat? Who dat? Who dat? Who dat? Who dat?" There you go. Your loyal listener, Annie Allen, a native New Orleanian, stuck in Conway, Arkansas for college. Congratulations, Annie. Congratulations.
Good Super Bowl. Good Super Bowl.
Very, very good Super Bowl.
Excellent results for the world.
Yeah, I think so.
Not saying it made Katrina worthwhile, but...
No. But not quite.
Yeah. And finally, this email comes from Fernando Colina in Boston. Ma. Does that mean where his mother lives? Ma. Anyway, he writes on the subject, "Worst email. Andrew, turn off the TV while you're podcasting. It's rude and shows disrespect to your fellow buglers. John, plug the bugle on the Daily Show. It's show business, baby. Lose the British reticence." It's all about the listeners, John. "You promised an awful prize to the best email. I'm claiming an awesome prize for the worst email." "Yours truly from the opposite side of the River Styx, since you are already dead to me, so no need to have you killed."
Wow.
Fernando Colina.
Good email.
Yep.
Good, bad email.
Good, bad email. Yeah. What kind of prize can they give?
Don't know, Andy. Opening this door.
Tom's holding up an empty plastic bag.
I mean, that's technically a prize.
Well, that's the prize.
Okay.
So, Fernando, if you email us your address, I'll send you that empty plastic bag that Thomas just held up. I'll even sign it from someone else. Not me. I'm not signing it. But I will sign it, but in someone else's name. Do keep your emails flooding into the bugle at timesonline.co.uk. Or else, our vengeance will be swift and deadly. And once again, we've battered on too long and we can't really do sport. We're going to tell you about Afghanistan defeating America at cricket. What a sport story that is, John. That shows who the Afghans have been paying more attention to out of their liberating powers.
Yeah.
Are they playing baseball? No. Are they playing cricket? Yes. 1-0 Britain. And beating America at cricket. Oh, outstanding. So we'll have more on that next week. I did promise that Wall, the marginal sports correspondent, will be back this week. Well, I'm afraid his event was snowed off. I believe he was going to be reporting from the World Compliment Fishing Championships. So maybe we'll have that next week. That's about it. So the forecast for this week is, by this time next week, will Tom have re-emigrated back to Britain after finding the perfect weather conditions and a high-quality way of life in Australia simply too un-Scottish to live with? Because you need stuff to make you miserable as a Scot. That's, yeah. Otherwise, you basically lose your raison d'etre.
Well, yeah. It is going to be tricky dealing with perfectly cold beer and 35-degree temperatures.
Yeah.
But by next week, I still won't have actually got there. I'll be sunning myself in Singapore. So.
Oh, OK. Wow.
So it's probably not. So that's not the greatest prediction, but we'll see what happens.
OK, great. Well, good luck, Tom. Bon voyage.
And, bon voyage, yeah.
We'll be thinking of you from Singapore.
Yeah.
The world's most welcoming repressive regime.
There. There you go. It's not nothing. It's not nothing.
Singapore, which of course is where David Beckham's wife lives.
Oh, boy.
Is it on? It's on. Oh boy. That's what you're leaving with.
Yes, really. That's it, Andy. That's how you're signing out Tom's British based bugle.
I've got to start, I think, the mainstream success, John.
Yeah. Next time we speak to Tom, it will be for the first Tricontinental Bugle. See you, Tom. G'day.
G'day.
See you, Tom.
Cheers, Paul. Take it easy.
For the best in sport, comedy, science and books, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.